Today on the podcast, I'm thrilled to celebrate an underrated talent, Dave Cheena, who records music as Firstborn Son. Over the past 4 years in the club, he's created 4 albums, each with its own distinct world. We dive into his latest, Monkey Paw, a spaghetti western-inspired journey that's both lighthearted and quite dark. Dave prefers to work behind the scenes as a producer, but we also explore the challenge he faces in hearing his own singing voice truly shine. This is a conversation about midlife reflection and the courage to follow through. Thanks so much for joining me. Welcome to the Magic of Songwriting podcast with iHeart Songwriting Club. In this podcast, we help you reconnect with and experience the transformation, the joy, and the magic of songwriting so that you can become the songwriter you've always dreamed of being. I'm Francesca De Valence, and I'll be your guide. Let it go. Big welcome to the Magic of Songwriting podcast, Dave. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Francesca.
So you're in Canberra in the capital city of Australia, is that right?
I sure am, and we've actually got quite a nice day today.
Beautiful.
A change.
Oh, really? Oh, you get quite cold there, don't you?
We do, yep. Yeah, so it's starting to warm up now, which is great.
So people who live in Canberra, it's a very beautiful city. It's a very beautifully planned city. A lot of politicians, or is it just seasonal?
Look, there's a lot of public servants, but it's a great place to live. I've been here most of my life. I've travelled quite a bit, but this is home. Beautiful nature, the surroundings. It's a really nice place. It's quiet. It's kind of like a small country town.
It is quiet, isn't it? What's the live music scene down there? What's the music scene like in Canberra?
Yeah, it kind of goes through waves. And I've, to be honest, been a little bit distant from the live scene for the last few years. But there's definitely a scene or a number of scenes. Quite a big metal community.
Yeah.
But there's all sorts of music, some really good bands coming out of Canberra.
Yeah, nice. Well, you haven't been much on the live music scene because you've been making a bunch of albums, which we need to talk about. So we have never spoken before, but we've shared a couple of club groups together, as it turns around every 10 weeks, there might be a new one or two people that join my group. When I say my group, I've got my own club group. It's, I'm not in everyone's groups. And you just happen to roll around into one of my groups and I'm like, who's this guy and what's this coolness? So that's how we met, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Actually, I disagree. I come back. You sent me an email a couple of years back saying, hey, Francesca, I wrote an album. This was Serotonin Harvest, which I'm learning is your 4th album. And you released it and you said, I wrote this in the club and I listened to it that weekend on repeat and I loved it. So actually that's probably my first recognition of you as an artist, Firstborn Son, and you as a person. So
that's
thanks
right.
for that.
No, thank you. And that was awesome to get some promotion through the club as well.
Oh, look, if you're going to write an album in the club, we're going to want to talk about it. So it's a no-brainer. and we want to share. I created a club to help people write songs. Well, to help me write songs, let's be really honest. That's exactly how the club was created, to help me and my friends write songs. And that hundreds, actually thousands of people can be part of it. And this specific season has all been around people who have written albums in the club. But you have not written one album in the club and you have not written 2 albums, which many people in this season have written 2 albums in the club at least. You have written 4 or 5 albums in the club and I am mind blown.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
No wonder you don't go out and be a part of the live music scene.
I love the studio. That's very much the way I write music is studio-based. So I have a palette of instruments and sounds that I just sort of drill into that and get lost in that creative space. So, yeah, it's really where my heart is. And it's been like that for years. So I think I got my first four track when I was about 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And was just, yeah, fascinated with the process of recording.
Was that your first foray into any music making, or did you play instruments before you got your four track?
So I got my first bass guitar when I was 10. Mm-hmm. A mate and I, we were into AC/DC at the time and decided we'd start a band, and he chose guitar, so I had to go bass.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so, and prior to that, I was really into music in general, but like making my own little radio shows on an old cassette recorder.
Oh my gosh, that's parents had. Pretty cute.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you still have those tapes?
I think my sister might, but yeah, they're, hopefully they're locked away somewhere.
Oh my gosh, I'd love to hear a little bit of that just from that, like just from a fun point of view. I think I've got a whole box of tapes that my sister and I used to make. Like we would sing along with the radio and record us singing along with the radio, all those sorts of things, right? It's so great, isn't it?
Amazing.
Technology when you're young.
Yeah. Well, I've still got my four track, and I still, every now and again when I'm feeling uninspired with the computer, I'll pull it out and write some music on that.
So you and your friend, your guitarist friend, you had a little band and you recorded some of that probably?
Yeah, we did a little bit of recording back then. We played one live show, which was a disaster.
Did that influence you wanting to play live again?
Yeah, I think we kept going. The next band did a bit of live, and then there was a period where, again, I was really focused on the writing and recording side of things.
Yeah.
The last band I was involved in a few years ago, we did about 5 years of constant gigging. That was pretty exhausting. I don't like being the center of attention and being up on a stage, and
people have to really look at you on the stage, whereas at the studio level, tell me about how, you know, that sort of, you create a different world, don't you?
Yeah, that's very much it. It's really about the music, then, and sort of distance myself from that and make it about the song.
One thing I recognize from, well, I now need to go and listen to all of your albums, but Serotonin Harvest, and I may have listened to one of the other ones when I was there listening that weekend, but it's such a different soundscape to what is your fifth album, Monkey Paw, that we're celebrating the release of. So congratulations on your fifth album.
Thank you.
It's such a different soundscape. So tell me about how you create. Like what is Firstborn Son, and what does Firstborn Son do?
Yeah, cool. So look, in terms of coming up with ideas for material, I still think in albums as the media, as the format, and that's always been the case since I was a little kid listening to my mum's Stones and Beatles and Dylan records, just fascinated with that physical media in the first place, but just the idea of that start and finish. Kind of related a little bit to movies and TV series where, you know, a movie, it's very short. You've only got so much time to get an idea out there. A song sort of similar. With an album, you've really got that time to develop a theme and or multiple themes. But the club has definitely inspired me in terms of the output and to actually keep that going. So my plan is every year to release an album. And I've done, out of 4 years, I've done five, so I'm exceeding that at the moment.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so usually at the start of a term in the club, I'll maybe the first two songs, I'm just sort of getting a feel for which direction the next album will go in.
Huh.
So I use the prompts from the club, and there might already be some other little seeds of inspiration there already. And then there's usually a moment, and it's usually in the first couple of songs of a term where it clicks and it says, yeah, that's where I want to take this. And then I'll use the rest of that term and potentially the next term after that to write the material.
So can I just relay this back to you to confirm if I'm hearing this correctly? So you've you've just released Monkey Paw, and I know you've come back to the club, and you happen to also come back into my group. So it just happened to be on that 10-week cycle. So I think we're in the same group. Yeah, of course, I listened to your song the other day. It's like, hello, here you are again. and I meant that in the best possible way. I think I said, oh, your signature Beck / Beatles sound, which I love. Oh, it's also a bit Beach Boys. It's Beach Boys? Yeah, Beach Boys sound.
I get Beach Boys all the time.
Yeah, it's great. It's in your harmony.
They're definitely an influence. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. So you've just released your fifth album. Well, you know, you released it a couple of months ago, and here you are back in the club, and you have no real concrete idea of what direction this is going to go in, but you play for a couple of songs until you find your feet in that new direction. Is that what you said?
Exactly. And I've already got the idea for the next album now as of a couple of days ago, so... third song in this term.
How is it that those ideas are so different to what you've done before?
After I finish an album, it's kind of a weird mental state that I go into. There's sort of listening to the material and thinking what I could have done better, and then I'll shelve it for a while. And I just go out and listen to music, discover stuff that I haven't heard. Dig through some of my favourites, just that referencing process.
Right. You plant seeds, you sow seeds, or maybe not even sowing seeds, but you're just toiling the soil in a new way by listening to new music.
Right. Yeah, it's somewhat subconsciously happening and sometimes intentional, but it's really just what's out there, what have I missed? And sometimes, like, I went back a few weeks ago and dug out that album Rio by Duran Duran, which I was familiar with a couple of the songs off it, never really listened sort of back to back. And just amazed, just love it. So I was going to go down an 80s kind of direction, but that's changed now.
Right. Okay. So hang on, Duran Duran is 80s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was going to be my next project.
I've got to catch up with two songs to know where, because I've only listened to your first song, and we've just finished week three, so I am actually a little bit behind on my listening. But it's kind of a little bit how this year's been rolling around, but I do get there. I will listen to them. So I've just got to listen to your next two songs to know right where you're going, right? I'm going to be like,
yeah, that's right. Yeah.
This is great. So I was a big part of your group during Monkey Paw, the fifth album that you released earlier this year, and really got to hear, I suppose, some of your workflow for production. And I did hear how you used the club in some ways, but rather than me telling everybody how you did that, I'd love you to come back to the beginning of Monkey Paw. And, you know, we've just shared the genesis of album number six already, but I suppose it sort of started not dissimilarly. But what were your what were your references? How did you create? Let's come back to the beginning of Monkey Paw.
Yeah, cool. So the song Dimming Light, which we'll discuss today, was really the seed for Monkey Paw. And I've been listening to the Grateful Dead's album Working Man's Dead, particularly Uncle John's Band, as a song, which has that bluegrass kind of feel to it. And I've never really been into bluegrass or country, but, you know, I thought I'll give this a go. So I did some guitar lessons to try and learn the style a little bit, and came up with the main guitar line for Dimming Light. And, yeah, that sort of spawned it and thought, okay, cool, we'll give the country thing a go. And then it kind of flowed from there to Spaghetti Western, which the second song on the album is very much influenced in that genre. And I tried to weave that country theme throughout the album, though there's a few poppier moments, and I do always try and include a little bit of a psychedelic feel here and there throughout the music as well. But yeah, that's sort of the genesis of it. It was really that song Dimming Light that kicked it all off.
Wow. And so Grateful Dead, guitar lessons, Dimming Light, kind of there were the genesis of ideas, or the seeds that were sown.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. I had no idea. So as soon as you talked about going to get guitar lessons, it reminded me of method actors. You know, when they go and they're just in character for the whole film, like the making of the film, and they're in character, they don't do anything else but be in that character. Are you familiar with the concept of a method actor?
I am, yeah.
It just sort of struck me as like you're in a character zone for this whole project, and then after that character is fully realized and it's captured in the album or in the film, like it's a clean cut. It's like the cord has been cut and you can move on to the next role.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's very much been for at least four of the five albums has been the idea. There is, I try, I don't know whether I've succeeded or not, but there's usually a running theme throughout the album. Now for Monkey Paw, it's I'm in my mid-40s now, so it's really my midlife crisis album. I tried to capture that theme there, but then telling the story through a character, just as you just described, which the Spaghetti Western song on the album is sort of sets that up.
I don't know if I've actually ever heard anyone speak about their creativity in such a way, and I'm sure people do it. I think Beck is an example of an artist that I've sort of used as a reference for you before, because you have these sort of projects, but I don't know if I've ever actually heard Beck talk about his projects, but you can just hear it sonically. They're very much sitting in different sort of characters or very different genres. And I think that you are doing that, but just the way you've talked about it, it's kind of like, here's an idea. I didn't know how to play that, so I went and got a lesson. You know, it's a fascinating. I don't know if anyone I know is that committed to creating a project of a certain type. You're like really, yeah. You're almost attached to the outcome, if I may be so bold to make such a statement, from the beginning in some ways, right?
Yeah. Well, that's very true. So I think like once I have the idea for the project, I commit myself to that. Yeah. And you know, I've got notebooks where I'll scribble out sort of structure ideas for the album. I'll start on the artwork. So that all that stuff could be happening in parallel before the songs or while the songs are being written as well.
Yeah, you're not just a musician. There's something else going on here. Like there's a whole realm. You're a realm maker.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, you're a maker of realms. I wonder if you did video, what you would do there too.
Well, I do animation. Is another one of my hobbies. I haven't found a lot of time for that lately, but definitely that's another one from childhood. I started pretty young with little plasticine, stop motion animations. So I do try and tie all of those creative endeavors into Firstborn Son.
Yeah, this is cool. It's almost like, you know, I think actually the opening of Monkey Paw album is a little bit step right up, you know, but in its own Spaghetti Western type of way, and you use a sample. I don't know what it is, but you use a sample of something.
Yeah, it's from an old movie and I can't for the life of me think what it was. Yeah, it just seemed to fit with the theme.
Absolutely. I love the album. I really do.
Thanks.
So let's have a little listen to the first version of Dimming Light that kicked off your fifth album. So you did tell me that you wrote it to the theme of Torch in the club. And just going back to let people know when this was back in 2024, so it's only last year. Like this is how quick your turnaround is. And I have to say, Dave, most people's turnaround is like 4 or 5 years from writing a song to getting on an album. And yours is extraordinarily fast. But I think that's because you're accomplishing an album a year, which is kind of, you know, your personal goal. And you have the skill set to do that. I think if a lot of artists had the production skill set or, you know, developed that because they chose to get lessons, they probably would be able to do that. A reminder for myself to go and do that. So the theme for the week was Torch, and the exercise was to explore the light source that is a torch, fire or battery operated, to inspire your song and use torch or torchlight as a metaphor, analogy in your lyric. Now, how I've experienced you using the club, and I'm not going to play the song that you submitted this week because you resubmitted it with some changes. So you're using the club. So let me just tell people, it's like, what month was this? This was April 24, and then by November 24, so like just over a year ago, you resubmitted this and you said this one was originally written for the prompt of Torch. By the time this comes around, this is like the week of Sight. So it kind of, you know, probably did make a lot of sense to resubmit it. And you said kind of fits in with this week's theme too. Backing vocals on this courtesy of a girl named Scott, that's her artist name, from another songwriting group I'm in. Hopefully heading into the studio in the next few weeks with a drummer to record live drums for the album. Thanks for your feedback. So what were you trying to accomplish by bringing this song back in? Did you want different feedback? Were you just kind of trying to tick a box by going, here's my song for the week? Talk me through the process of, you know, you wrote the song back in April and then you're resubmitting it in November, which I have zero problem with, right? Like I have zero problem with that because you're actually outputting at a next level and you're using it in a meaningful way to you as an artist and a songwriter. That's the bit that matters, right?
Yeah, yeah. So usually when I resubmit, it's a new version. So whether it could be a change to lyrics, instrumentation, structure, whatever. So it's generally, you know, I've submitted the first time around. I've worked through other songs on the project. And then as I get to that next stage of trying to refine things, it's, yeah. And for me, it's really, it's that accountability. It's feedback aside, it gives me that push to actually get something done, and I'm sure that's really the intent behind the club, and everyone's in a similar position. But I found that before the club, I'd struggle to finish a song, and now my output's just is where it is. So it's
You know, I think everyone who I've interviewed pretty much ever on this podcast, especially this season being about albums, so with albums, there's a level of consistency required in order to get, you know, your 9, 10, 11 songs. I think that is a commonality that people find useful in the club is accountability. And I know there are some writers out there that would go, oh, I write when I feel like it. You know, what accountability is there? But, you know, and I love the romantic notion of writing. I really do. But if you want to have some sort of output, whether that's an album a year or finishing songs or playing a show or whatever that is, you kind of got to get over the romantic notion of it and writing.
Yeah, that's been the biggest change for me because for years there was always that mystery around songwriting and that idea of inspiration. But, you know, through reading some really good books, I can't think of his name, Jeff Tweedy, book from Wilco and just other material actually about the practice of writing, and it's just getting it out, just get the bad stuff out so you can find the good stuff. Mm. And that really changed my whole mentality as well as joining the club. So there's periods where I'll try and write something every day, whether it's just a musical idea or lyrics, and it really does improve your skills. So it's less of a mystery and more of a skill set. In saying that, however, there is still that magic that once something's done and you got to write the next one, and it's like, how did I finish the song? Where did that come from? So there's still that, there is the magic and the mystery to it as well. But yeah.
I would agree. There's still a magic and a mystery, even when you're an experienced songwriter, but maybe there's a skill set that allows you to A, shape it, shape the burst of idea into something, but B, I think there's a skill set to work through blocks.
Yeah, oh, definitely, yeah.
If you're just working on the there's a mystery and I don't know where it's going to go and I've hit a block and I don't know what to do, that's where a lot of songwriters kind of have these hundreds of unfinished ideas.
Yeah, yeah, and that was definitely me, you know, five, 6 years ago.
That was me before the club. Before the club, there were hundreds of unfinished ideas. After starting the practice, I really don't have any unfinished ideas. Like,
yeah,
because I just write at least one song a week and I just get the draft out, you know, and that draft may not have a bridge. It may just be an A, B, A, B, B. It may be an A, A, A and there was never a B section and that's okay, but I don't need to finish it any more than that. I haven't sort of given up on it. I've just kind of gone, this is where it ended up.
Yeah, yeah, and that's very much how I think these days. It's I do like, so for each week in the club, I do like to, I never stick to the hour or very rarely.
I was actually going to ask you, like, surely you're not doing what this work is in an hour, but.
No. So look, often the seed will come out in that sort of first hour or two, and then it's the, because I use a studio for that, for, you know, for coming up with the ideas and the arrangement and the instrumentation, very much sort of leads me into different sections. And
yeah, you don't, you rarely stick to the hour. So how long did something like Dimming Light? I know you have, you had the first version of Dimming Light, which was called Little Light, and then Dimming Light. So roughly how long had you spent on that before you submitted it?
So that one was a little bit different than how I'd usually work, because I was trying to learn that bluegrass style on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually pretty quickly, it came together pretty quickly once I'd sort of learned a few techniques. It's really only two main sections musically.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had that one down probably just in a couple of hours, I think, the initial seed, and then there was a bit of tweaking of the lyrics.
Yeah, right. Well, let's take a listen to first version of Dimming Light, written by Dave Cheena, artist name Firstborn Son. Let's take a listen. Love that song. I remember when I heard it. So I was a part of that group in that November 2024. And I said, loving your happy go lucky style that has a much darker undertone. And I stand by that statement. It's so joyful, but there's a dark undertone there. And I do still find the contrast, which is what I'm reading in my comment. The contrast of the A and B sections are so satisfying. I said, I get an Eagles meets Beach Boys production vibe.
There's that Beach Boys again.
Yeah, it is quite dark undertone, right?
Yeah, look, that's something I guess I've learned through feedback through the club and from other people listening is there is often the music will be somewhat upbeat and major chords and that's those sorts of keys, and then with the darker undertone. So mm-hmm. there's always that contrast.
Mm-hmm. So were you satisfied with this?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think like it definitely enough to want to keep tweaking it and pursuing it for the album.
Mm-hmm.
There's always, I think the vocals is always the one for me that I've found the hardest. I never really felt comfortable singing, and it was only probably 7 or 8 years ago where I started singing, live and on recordings. Something that I actually share with people. So it's always been the one. I guess just not sure how my voice sort of lands and where it sits. And you'll often quite hear many layers of vocals in my recordings.
Right.
So that's always been the bit. But
Can you tell me more about that? I mean, it's not the first time we've had this conversation on the pod with people about singing and being a songwriter. You know, you're a songwriter and producer, and we're talking about your singing and and that being its own skill set. So, I just want to leave that open. Can you share a little bit more about that? I mean, you talked about not being able to play someone on guitar and going to get a lesson, and obviously there was a turnaround on that where you felt satisfied with that. What is it about singing where that doesn't quite get to that point? It's different, isn't it?
It is. Sometimes I think maybe it's that old thing of, when you hear yourself recorded back, it's always that, is that what I really sound like? And because you sound different when you're speaking, obviously, to yourself. I've never been a strong singer, so, I voice can get a little bit shaky at times and pitchy. So I think that's the main thing. It's just really that confidence side of things. But I've kind of pushed past it now. I think it's really just whatever.
It's kind of a part of the character, right? So the character has a different voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't recall off the top of my head. Do you use sort of falsetto singing for all of your albums?
For a lot. I sort of mix between because my voice is a lot lower, obviously, my speaking voice, but yeah. I kind of default to that falsetto, and that's potentially comes from a lot of the music that I listen to. Bands like Granddaddy and Flaming Lips have been big influences. Potentially through that.
Yeah. So way back when, recalling on a previous, job that I had, so I used to teach voice at the Queensland Conservatorium of Music in the Contemporary Voice Department, and I used to teach singing teachers and the pedagogy strand. I didn't know if you know this, I might shalaborate on this a little bit.
Sure.
So it's much harder to control pitch when you're in an upper register or in a falsetto. So there's two main vocal muscles. Let's just for ease, the ones that make them longer or lengthen the vocal folds or vocal cords, and ones that shorten them and make them fatter. So when they're fatter, it's easier to sort of control pitch, and when they're longer, it's harder to control pitch. You sort of need a little bit more nuanced, refined skill set at that point. So obviously when you sing higher, it's harder to nail it, right?
Yeah.
And if you're not singing belting as a woman, for example, as a male male or female. So it is actually hard. You're choosing, where I was going with this, is you're choosing to sing in harder to control parts of your voice for the creative and sonic palette that gives you.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's interesting to hear. Yeah.
Had you never heard that before?
No, look, I knew, I've read a little bit in the past about head voice and all those sorts of things, but that's...
Oh, well, my shalaborating was validated then.
Yeah. That's right.
Look, I love your voice. I think it's unique. It sort of, because of you layer so many different, you've got some octaves, you've got lots of double tracks of the same pitch, it's got its unique character. So it's so interesting to hear you speak that's a point of, I suppose, vulnerability for you and makes you sort of second guess things. And I know you've moved past that, but still it's interesting because I really love that your voice is a character in the production, just like that guitar part is a character, just like A Girl Called Scott is a character.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. But I think, it's still there. I guess that's always in the back of the head. And I go through periods where, oh, the next album's going to be an instrumental, so I don't have to go through the torture of having to listen to myself.
Right.
But, yeah, look, it's getting easier. I'm really trying to not care so much.
Yeah. How interesting, yeah. Right? We're mid-40s and still care about things, right?
I know. It's ridiculous.
Can I give you a challenge for a future album, maybe album number 7?
Sure.
Can you sing in a really awful voice? Like just commit to like a really awful toned, like, you know, like just for the sake of it, just for the sake of going, well, heck, if I'm going to not like this, I might as well really not like it.
Oh, I really like that. That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's like own the thing that you're afraid of. Actually, that's just really, I find that empowering, full stop. If there's something that, this is very emotionally deep. If there's something that, if there's something that I'm afraid of, I find that if I just own it and just go, well, I'm going to lean into that. Like, for example, and let's talk about songwriting. I think I've mentioned this many times on the pod before, but if I'm thinking that I'm such a cheesy melody writer, right? I'm just writing a cheesy lyric and a cheesy melody writer. I'm so afraid to do that. Like, I don't want to be that. I'm just like, stuff it. I'm just going to be a cheesy melody writer and I'm going to be a cheesy lyricist. I'm just going to lean into it. And it takes everything away. It takes the power of the resistance away.
Yeah, I love that, and I've definitely done that in the past. There's a single that I'm about to release, another one that was written in the club. It's very much that cheesy, but then leaning into that and then just going with it. And actually, I'm quite happy with how it turned out. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Every time I take, so I think that we give things some power, and I think you're giving your voice the potential to have power over your creativity that it doesn't actually have that power, you're giving it to it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think your voice is fabulous character in your work. So, you know, thanks. That's an outsider's who's not attached to your work, but, you know, I'm a fan. I genuinely am a fan. I love what
you
do. I
really appreciate that. Thank
you. Yeah, I always get a kick out of listening to your stuff. Yeah, and as I said, when I listened to Serotonin Harvest, I was like, yeah, that was just on repeat. I remember going to the Gold Coast that weekend. And I was listening to you. I remember where I was going. That's a sign of a good album, that you know where you were when you listen to it, right?
Yeah, amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah, so we need more people to go and listen to Firstborn Son. hey, Dave, I haven't prepped to you with this, so I'm taking note of the timestamp in case we want to take it out. But I remember when I asked you at the beginning of 2025 if you would like to talk about this album, because I knew it was coming out, and you said yes, and then you said it's not going to come out anymore. Would you be open to talking about that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, cool. We don't need to take any of this out then. So what happened?
So we finished the album. So I went into a guy named Dave Pendragon, who's got a studio in Canberra, went in there and did the drums for the album. So we did 9 drums in a day, and was really happy with that. Find once I get into the mixing stage of an album, that's probably my least favorite part of it. It's where I start to overcook things, and that's what happened with Monkey Paw. I think I went too far into the weeds, became too emotionally attached in some sense, and then at the end of that period, it was just didn't feel right.
Mm-hmm.
Now I did actually release it on Bandcamp, so there's every year there's this what do you call it, it's Record Production Month, so it's run out of, I think it's if it's Canada or somewhere up in the somewhere in the north US, where they get songwriters to release an album, to produce and release an album in the month of February, and it happens every year. So that's sort of how this all ties in for me, is I'll use the club to write the material and refine it, and then that period through February is right, finishing touches and release it. So Monkey Paw did get submitted as part of that and was released on Bandcamp. But yeah, then I went through this period of just, self-doubt and just not really being happy with where it ended up.
So where does the self-doubt come from? Is it because you got feedback or you didn't have feedback? You know, where...
Well, there was no feedback. So, and the feedback that I did receive was positive. So there's a few. I've got a close mate who, before I release anything, I go over to his studio and we have a listen, and he gives me some feedback and suggestions on things to change. But feedback was always good.
But you didn't believe it.
Yeah, that's just something that's always been there. It's that imposter syndrome, potentially.
Yeah. Like, who are you to be mixing?
Yeah.
Well, who are you? Who are you to not be mixing?
Yeah, well. Yeah, so I think it's something that's always been there. And it's I wouldn't say I'm a perfectionist, but, yeah, there's definitely that voice in the head that pushes things down a bit sometimes, but I try to get past it.
Yeah. So how did you get to the point where you went, I'm releasing it? What was it? What was that? There was obviously a big struggle for a time, and then something happened where you broke free from that, or maybe, I don't know, maybe you ignored the feeling and did it anyway, but what happened? How did it come to be that monkey paw is out in the world?
Yeah, so actually my friend Andrew, who I mentioned before, had reached out to me and was just sort of asking what's happening, you know, when you're releasing it. And just, yeah, some good feedback from him, and that kind of gave me a bit of a kick in the butt. And I actually didn't I don't think I changed anything from what was uploaded to Bandcamp in February to what's up on Spotify now. There might have been a little bit of mastering, some tweaks there, but it was really like, yeah, just get it out. And I also find that if I have a project or a song that's sitting there not complete, I find it really hard to move on to the next thing.
So there was a bit of
so it's almost like, yeah. So it was kind of impacting other projects I was trying to work on.
You were stuck.
So it's, yeah.
So what sort of
just get it out there.
What sort of feedback did Andrew give you that allowed you? Obviously, there's two parts to this. There's the you were feeling stuck and therefore not in creative flow, because you're either stuck or you're in flow. They're your options, really. So you knew that you weren't in flow, you were stuck. So that obviously had some feeling, you know, desire to move away from that, because why would you want to be stuck? But also Andrew gave you some feedback. I'm curious as to what that feedback was. Was it different? Was it the time of it?
Look, I think it was something very simple, like the album's great. Blokes, we don't say much.
But. Yeah, well, that's fair enough. So it's just what you needed to hear. I remember when you emailed me and said, I've decided to shelve the album. I'm pretty sure I said, what? Send it to me. I want to hear it.
You did.
I would have absolutely loved to hear it, and I would have told you to put it out there. But, you know, I think you need to hear it from someone that you need to hear it from, right?
Yeah. Sometimes things just, I guess it just happens when it happens.
Look, I'm, for your own sake, that you're in flow and you're writing the next thing, good on you. But also, I really love it. It's a fun album. It's playful. It's serious. It's just a whole. It's like a movie in an album. It's really wonderful, and I love your work. I can't say that enough. I'm really a big fan. So good on you for getting it out. And I think, you know what? I think there's a handful of fans that for everybody. I think there's a handful of fans for everybody, and even if a handful of people love what you're doing, it's worth doing it, right?
I agree. Yeah, that's enough for me these days. I think, you know, in the past there was probably that dream and that idea of, you know, being famous and well listened to, but now it's, yeah.
You need that. I mean, that's all about marketing, right? You know, there's previous podcast episodes about marketing. This is not about marketing, but I do know what you're saying, that if, you know, to realize that dream of being a well-respected, well-listened to, you know, popular artist, it's marketing.
Yeah. Yep. And I hate marketing.
No, you don't even want to be seen on a stage.
No.
So I don't think that's your pathway necessarily. But again, just if 100 people love what you're doing and they keep listening to that and you keep growing that, and maybe it's 120 and that, you know, like, there's value in that. And if it brightens someone's day and if they have an album that reminds them of their trip to the Gold Coast and brings them joy. There's something in that, you know, like there's no such thing as small things. They're just things. There's no small event. There's just events.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually thinking the other day about you know, why do I do this? Why do I invest so much energy and this passion and all that into the songwriting? I think the way I was thinking about it is it's like there's been a song in my head probably since I started writing music for however many years that is now. There's a song that I've been chasing and I can't find it. I haven't got there yet. And every song I write, I'm trying to get that song. And I hope that I never do find it, or maybe the last song I write. But it keeps me going. That's kind of how I was thinking about it.
I love that so much. And I feel like I've heard versions of people say that before. Not quite like that, but I understand. And I think that's almost like our soul signature, you know, song, right? That where it's like the very thing that we're seeking is well, okay, this might be a bit spiritual, but we're going to go there anyway. It's almost like we're trying to find the song version of our soul.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, what would my soul sound like in song?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And there's a hope that, it almost feels like if we did find it, then probably wouldn't have to write anymore. So, and that's a horrible thought.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you could maybe, who knows? Because when you reach that, if you ever do, you may reveal there's something else beyond that.
Well, maybe.
So, you know, let's take a listen to what you have arrived at on Monkey Paw album with the song Dimming Light, which I think is the third track of the album. Is that right? Hang on, let me just go to the album here.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check
that. Oh, fourth too. Track off the album.
Fourth track.
Yeah. Oh, because the first one is that intro using the So, look, there is a journey that the album takes you on before you get to Dimming Light, and, whoa, one heck of a journey it is. But let's listen to the final version, the released version, which you can listen to on all streaming platforms, including Bandcamp, of course, which is the original platform that this came out on, Dimming Light, written by Dave Chena, released as Firstborn Son. Instant happiness feeling. That's all I can say. Instant happy feelings. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is so great. So that is Dimming Light from your fifth album, Monkey Paw, fourth album that you have released from being a part of the club, which makes me want to ask, how did you hear about the club and when did you join?
Yeah, so I think I first heard about it. An artist in Canberra, Frank Zappier, who I've believe been part of the club for a while.
Yeah.
We were doing a few gigs at the same venues with Frank, and he'd mentioned it just in a conversation, and then it had popped up on his Facebook feed or one of those. So I just started digging into it and went from there.
Right. And that would have been maybe 2021 maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, because, you know, if you've managed to write four albums in that time, at least three or four years in. That's amazing. Oh, Frank's
possibly more, because there was a bit of a period before that, so I'd have to go back and have a look. But, yeah, it's been a few years now.
Yeah, Frank's been a part of the club since, I think, 2019, potentially 2018. We did a project with Music ACT, which is the peak body for music in, for those listening, and, of course, you would know, Dave, for peak body for contemporary music industry in Canberra or in ACT, Australian Capital Territory, and we did this project where 20 songwriters wrote 10 songs in 10 weeks, and we had 200 songs, and we called it the 200 Songs for Canberra project. And, yeah, we had a lot of new club members, obviously, that joined to be a part of that, then that just kept writing. And we actually have quite a strong Canberran. How do we say these people?
Canberran
community in iHeart Songwriting Club as a result of that initial partnership. And then, of course, you know, Frank recommends people, and Lisa Richards, who we've had on the pod before, has recommended lots of people to the club. And so it grows and it grows because it's a community, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a great community.
Thank you.
It really opened my eyes to the talent and the quality of music. It's, you know, at that grassroots level, it's just insane. And it's the variety of different styles and genres. It's just, yeah, it's really inspiring.
Right back at you. So you're a part of some other musical projects in your city. Can you tell us a little bit more about how we can learn about other projects you do besides Firstborn Son?
Yeah, sure. So the most recent work was for a band, Gaslight Puppet Show. So that was the brainchild of Richard Plug, who was the drummer for Aussie psych band The Church. He was their drummer from 1980 to 1990, I believe. So he was playing drums for us in my previous band, Beta Blockers. And he reached out to me after that band split up, said, look, I've got a project. I want you to do some keyboards on. Can we do some stuff in your studio? So it was a really, really different activity or project for me. So Richie, I'm not sure if he plays any other instruments other than drums, but for this whole project he recorded the drums. That was where we started, and he did that without any backing tracks, no metronomes, anything. So we did all the drums in 2 days, I believe, for 10 songs.
Was that tricky to track over?
No, because his timing is like a metronome. Like,
wow.
dude's amazing. Yeah. So, and then it sort of over the next few weeks, he'd come over and he'd just hum musical ideas for me to play on the keyboards. So he had it all mapped out in his head.
Wow.
Pretty much the whole album mapped out in his head without having written anything down or without actually playing an instrument, which I thought was
phenomenal. Amazing.
Yeah, so we tracked the keyboards, and then I did some scratch guitar tracks, and then we brought in my mate Andrew as well. So he's his previous band, Wesley and the Crushers. We also brought in Goo, the guitarist from that band, and they laid down their bits. We did vocals, and then we brought Richard Bergman from the Sunny Boys, another well-known Aussie band, to do lead guitar. And yeah, it's sort of
about an 18-month
process.
Yeah.
It took about 18 months from start to finish to do all the tracking and a lot of layers. It's a trip of an album, really psychedelic and really cool. So the album's called Esoterica. That was released last year. up on all the streaming services.
Yeah, so Gaslight Puppet Show Esoterica.
Yeah, yep.
And is there any live project that goes alongside of that?
So I know Richie did, a couple of the guys did do some live stuff. I kind of pulled away from that. I had a bit going on at the moment, but I think they did one or two shows in Canberra.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Well, we can all go and check out Esoterica, the recorded project for sure, to hear all of your production work and keys and everything that you've done towards that album. And that would have been heaps of fun working with such a great crew of musicians who've got such legacy in the Australian music industry. Nice one.
Yeah. It was a really, really fun project.
Yeah, awesome. Look, Dave, thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. Thank you for being real with us and talking about, you know, the things that aren't so easy when it comes to making an album and creating and being vulnerable. And yeah, it's great. I love your work and can't wait to go and listen to what album number 6 direction is heading in.
thanks Francesca for all the support. Yeah, the club's just amazing. It's what it's doing for songwriters. It's yeah. I hope to be a member for a very long time.
Oh, that's awesome to hear. Thanks, Dave. Have a brilliant rest of your day. And
you too.
Everyone, go and check out Firstborn Son. Thanks for joining me for this episode. If you're ready to refine your craft and take your songwriting to new heights, our brand new online 10-week songwriting intensive is the perfect opportunity for you. This fully mentored course gives you the tools, insights, and personalized guidance to transform your songwriting. You'll master the art of crafting compelling melodies, deepen your understanding of harmony, and create songs that resonate with clarity and depth. Over the 10 weeks, you'll write 10 brand new songs and get detailed, actionable feedback from a professional songwriting mentor so that you can level up your writing in ways that you've never imagined. This course is a game changer designed to help you unlock your full creative potential and write songs that truly stand out. For more information, go to iheartsongwritingclub.com/songwriting courses. Join me for the next episode where we'll explore another songwriter's album journey and uncover the magic behind their creative process. Thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure to spend this time with you. To help others connect with the magic of songwriting, we'd love it if you'd take a moment to rate or review our podcast or share it with anyone you think would benefit from it. And if you want to find your community of songwriters, visit us at iheartsongwritingclub.com and let us help you reconnect with the magic of songwriting.